This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week, we come to you from
Sake Rock at the park. If you don't know where that is, it's because it's brand new right here next to New York here in Las Vegas. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know what? You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. Joining me now, when I say the park, it's not just one little location. It's a brand new development right here, right off the strip, not far from the Monte Carlo and a few other places, is Sean McClain. He's the executive chef and managing partner of Sage, 550 Pizza Bar, and Libertine Social. You got nothing going on, Sean.
No, we got a lot going on.
I mean, I have to ask the stupid question. Have we reached the point of diminishing returns? Can you continue to, not just you, but can Las Vegas continue to grow, opening up new restaurants every 5 minutes? Because everywhere you go, people say to me, for example, I spent a fair amount of time in Bangkok, and I say it's impossible to find a bad hotel in Thailand, right? It's almost getting to the point now where it's impossible to find a bad restaurant in Las Vegas.
Yeah, which says, you know, which really shows how far we've come in the last 10 years. I think the bar has been set really, really high in a lot of the scope of dining. But to your point, it's a competitive landscape. Everybody wants to do something new and exciting
It's a game of one-upsmanship.
It is. But, you know, some of it comes back to just execution and quality and remembering who the guest and the guest experience is.
All right, now you have 550 Pizza Bar, right?
Yes.
What does 550 mean?
Well, 550 was originally generated from the pizza oven temperature, and when we do our pizzas, it's kind of we really love the East Coast pizza.
Okay, we're not doing deep dish, we're doing thin slice?
It's thinner, you know, it's closer to New York, not as thin as Neapolitan, but what we loved about Neapolitan was the bubble, the char from the wood. But
I like a crust that's a little charred.
Yeah. We definitely get a little char in ours. So, but in terms of ingredients, it's definitely more of an East Coast style, more traditional red sauce, white sauce, you know, meats, clams, not necessarily a West Coast.
Will you do a four cheese?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. It's called Quattro.
Quattro formaggio.
Yeah,
come on,
John. I'm just kidding. It's not. But we actually do five cheeses on it. But
yeah, but who's counting?
Yeah, who's counting? It's a secret fifth.
Now you're a Michigan boy.
I am.
What got you started?
I went to Miami University.
So you never went to class?
Yeah, sort of.
Come on.
I went.
You're so busted.
I went. But, you know, I was cooking at the time, and I reached a point near the end of my college career that I really felt a strong tug towards the kitchen. And I was working. I'd been 4 years in by that point. And I kind of knew, I don't know, it was just somewhat of a destiny that pulled me in. We ate a lot. When we were kids, we ate out at restaurants a lot, and I just absolutely loved the experience, and I think it just got into me and, transferred to culinary school, and kind of the rest is history.
All right, so I'm going to ask you to take your owner's hat off or your partner's hat off and put your customer's hat on. When you walk into a restaurant, what pisses you off the most?
I think it starts with the hostess, and, you know, warmth, genuine warmth, and hospitality. And it's one of the hard things that position is very difficult because it can be very demanding, and, guests are very demanding.
Because, if you go to New York or a Los Angeles restaurant, it's like a 90% chance that the person who's working there doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Right? They're there until something else comes along.
Yeah.
You go to Europe, they not only want to be there, it's their profession.
Right, right.
So how do you get over that?
You know, it's all about the culture. You know, you really want them to enjoy the day, be really proud of the product that, that they're standing in front of.
You make them eat it.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But, you know, it's in hiring. It's hiring the people that, you know, skills are important, but personality and attitude are, you know, it's a cliche, but it's 95% of it.
And why'd you pick the park?
Well, we're, you know, close to the park. We actually in Aria and Mandalay Bay. So Libertine Social, our newest place, just opened in Mandalay Bay. We're really excited to be on the property. And so we're kind of bookending the park. But MGM has some really exciting things going on right now.
And at the park you've got?
I don't have anything at the park.
You don't? That's
no,
great.
No, okay. Yeah, it's, you know, just part of the new development, what MGM is bringing, food and beverage, to the city, and the park is one.
And 550 Pizza's where?
In Aria.
Okay.
And then we have Sage at Aria as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what's your signature dish at Sage?
Oh, we've got a few, you know, and I would say the most talked about is our foie gras creme brulee, which was which is a great decadent, you know, I felt like a really good slice of what Las Vegas is. You know, you come out to splurge a little bit, be decadent, and it's a great little snapshot of that.
Wow. Okay. Foie gras.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that in some circles it's considered politically incorrect.
Right, right.
But you're serving.
Fortunately, it's not here. Yep, yep. And I actually brought you another version. This is from Libertine, and so this is another preparation called foie gras mousseline, which a little peach mostarda on top.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
It's surrounded by the T-Mobile Arena. It's surrounded by, I mean, all sorts of other stuff. I can't keep up, but the guy who does keep up, or he better keep up, is the Senior Vice President of MGM Resorts Entertainment, Rick Arpin. I mean, how about that for an introduction? Well, I mean,
that's a lot of pressure, Peter.
Well, it's your job, man. So, I mean, at what point do you reach the point of diminishing returns? Because there's always something going on.
Yeah, I mean, Las Vegas is... Has seen that over the years, right? We keep changing.
There was a point, of course, where you were essentially overbuilt at one point. You had hotels that couldn't even open. There's still the Fountain Blue downtown that's still shuttered.
Sure.
Right? And a couple of projects that Boyd Gaming was doing, they had to stop that, right? And then all of a sudden we figure, oh, that's the end. That's it. That's it. Nothing's going to happen. And then, boom, it happens again.
Yeah, I mean, the city has always been one to reinvent itself. So here we go, right? Here we grow again, I guess.
But in what way?
Well, I think the difference is that the hotel supply, at least, is sort of been a little smarter. We'll see those projects, I think, come back eventually, some of the ones you mentioned, but it's going to take longer this time.
Talking to one of the hotel managers the other night, and he was saying to me, you know, it's wild. We have so many rooms in the inventory, and yet we're able to get a pretty good rate right now.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's growing, and you think, oh, everybody's discounting. But they're getting a good rate.
Yeah, I mean, the tourism economy here has been very strong. We've seen good hospitality results all across the country, and some other markets are starting to slow. We've seen continued growth across the board, convention business, et cetera.
Okay, what do you think is attributable to that?
Well, I think, part of it is exactly the appeal of Las Vegas for business destination, convention market has been really, really strong. We've seen incredible demand such that we're growing our convention center. We know that the city itself is growing its convention center.
But you know what? Las Vegas is no longer one convention center. I mean, if you take a look at what just MGM has, you know, over at the Bellagio just for Virtuoso.
Absolutely.
I mean, that you would call a convention center, so to speak,
sure.
Right? I mean, you have the Las Vegas Sands and you those guys, right? Then there's you.
I mean,
then there's the actual convention center.
Yep.
Everybody's got Mandalay. I mean, come on. That's a convention center.
Yeah, I think the stat is something like, you know, three of the five biggest convention centers in the world are right here in Las Vegas. So it's a huge part of our business. And I think the other piece that's very relevant is what I do and what my team does, which is entertainment. That's been a huge part of driving visitation.
But you've had a quantum shift in that as well. You know, it wasn't just entertainment to satisfy the high rollers. Now, entertainment is a revenue generator.
Yeah, absolutely. A little bit like we saw food and beverage transform in the city, from a loss leader to an attraction in and of itself. I think entertainment has definitely moved that way. It's not the lounge acts of the old days.
You have artists in residence now. People are actually hanging here.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest entertainment companies in the world, Cirque du Soleil, basically makes its home here. You're right. Several big name artists are here all the time. And then
You have Celine Dion, you have J-Lo.
Absolutely.
I mean, my good pal Lionel Richie's hanging out now here.
Even Lionel Richie's making Vegas his home.
Yeah.
And I think from the large-scale entertainment, and now as we've seen with sports, pro sports now coming to the market, the market has definitely become more like the New Yorks, the LAs, the Miamis in entertainment, just like it had already done in terms of hospitality.
All right, so now my big question, professional sports teams.
Yep.
You going to get one?
We have one. So 2017, fall of 17, a hockey team will start play here at T-Mobile Arena.
That's not a sports team. That's a fight team.
Partially, yes.
You're just doing fights again. That's all you're doing. They just have hockey.
We are the fight capital of the world.
Yes, you are. No, but I'm talking NFL.
Could happen. We'll see. We'll see. It's definitely a possibility. There's a little work to do.
Or NBA.
Yeah, I think NBA. Look, the NBA will follow the NHL certainly from a timeline perspective, and they'll be following how well the NHL does, how the market responds. I think they're. My guess. I've always said 5 to 10 years away from expanding or moving a team to a market like this.
But the money is there.
Yeah, we saw a tremendous corporate response to T-Mobile Arena in terms of sponsorship, premium seating. The hockey team is finding the same types of results, and I think we'll find that over the next year or so till the time they start. So it's definitely a more mature market than it was 10, 20 years ago.
So I should get ready.
it's as our mayor likes to say, we're now a major league city.
Yes, you are a major league city. How is Oscar these days?
Well, now the Bears is
wife.
Yes, Oscar's doing great.
He still shows up with his drink and the showgirls, doesn't he?
Exactly.
He does. That's a form of entertainment.
He's a legend.
You walk him out there and he has fun.
Exactly.
I love it. Rick Arpin, the senior vice president of MGM Resorts Entertainment. But when you get the sports team, and when you get the NFL team here or the NBA team here, you're going to get me some seats?
If it's NBA or NHL and T-Mobile Arena, I can probably help you out with that.
Yeah. Courtside?
We'll do the best we can.
Oh,
yeah.
You are such. Thanks a lot, Rick Arpin.
Always hedge my bets.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care. I am a passenger.
What could be better than my next guest, who's been making all sorts of noise in front of me, the author of The Modern Mixologist, Tony Abuganim. I mean, what is sitting in front of me?
Peter, nice to be on the show. Well, this is a drink that we feature over at Libertine Social. It's called the Queen's Park Swizzle. It was made famous at the Queen's Park Hotel in Trinidad, and it's a beautiful rum-based drink that we serve socially in a pitcher at your table for four.
A rum-based drink served socially in Las Vegas means call a cab.
Call a cab.
It means call a cab. Come on. Now, you're making – what are you doing now?
Well, this is a traditional style of preparation called swizzling, and this is a classic swizzle stick, Peter.
I've never seen a swizzle stick like this.
But that's the real McCoy. That came from Martinique. It grows on a tuber.
Is used by proctologists all over the world. This is painful.
Give it a try, Peter. Go ahead, get in there and swizzle a little bit.
I'm swizzling, okay.
Well, not really. You need to swizzle like this.
Oh, like this.
Like you're starting a fire.
Oh, well, I'm sure that's going to happen. Okay, let's make believe I just did that. Okay.
Right.
Now, what's in this?
Beautiful. Well, fresh spearmint. We make a Demerara syrup. It's fresh squeezed lime juice. And then there's a Demerara rum, El Diablo. It's a 15-year-old beautiful Guyana rum. And then to make
You got to be aware of and a little scared of a rum called El Diablo.
Well, it's a lovely, lovely sipping rum. It's like I said, it's Guyana rum, it's Demerara based, it's beautiful, and let's just taste it and see what you think.
Okay, so this is going to be the end of my career right here, okay.
It's topped with Angostura bitters, which
of course it is,
from Trinidad, and You know,
so everything here is basically, well, not Guyana. Guyana's next door, yeah.
Right. No, it's all from the Caribbean. Like I said, it's a style of drink made really popular in the Caribbean.
And you put a straw in here, too.
Well, yeah, so you can get your nose down into the mint and just...
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. I think the technical word, Peter, is yummy. Yummy.
It's a nice summer drink.
And we do a whole list of these at Libertine Social. We do five different swizzles, all inspired from the Caribbean, Bermuda, Martinique. Then we have a swizzle that's also a gin-based swizzle.
Okay, but when you wrote The Modern Mixologist, mm-hmm. I mean, based on the title of that book alone, you know, it's not necessarily just traditional drinks. You're just doing a little bit of cutting-edge stuff.
Yeah, The Modern Mixologist is my take on classics and original drinks from my 36 years behind bars. So they're original things, but everything, I think it was Mencken who once said, there'll never again be original cocktail, just variations on those that have come before it. And that's really my approach, you know, much like Sean and cooking recipes, they're basically things that follow spirit, sour, sweetener, and some type of modifier. And that's my approach to drinks, and I just try to balance
those. And some kind of like a stretcher.
A stretcher, yeah.
They kind of like take you out of the bar. Yeah.
Well, I thought you meant like something to stretch
No.
Like the swizzle.
Okay, but you know, you talk about variations. What about absinthe?
Well, absinthe, thank goodness they realized that shouldn't have been outlawed in the first place.
Why was it outlawed in the first place?
Well, you know, people were, in the early 1900s when they outlawed it, people were drinking all day. And they blamed it on absinthe because absinthe is a higher proof. But they said it was the thurgeon that was making people have these hallucinogenic experiences and do things like cut off their ear and kill their wives. But, you know, they were raving
Give
alcohol.
Me two of those.
The raging alcoholics back then, because water wasn't always safe. So you would wake up and you would, you know.
That was their excuse. Brandy. The water's not safe. I'll have four absinthe and give me a knife. Yeah, got it.
But absinthe was the bad guy. And, you know, people were drinking more absinthe.
Was there
Paris.
A strong absinthe lobby suddenly to get it back?
There really was. I mean, as this resurgence in classic cocktails took place about 15 years ago, because it was 2007 that it was legalized again. People realized that it wasn't the thurgeon. It was just that people were drinking too much back then. So absinthe,
otherwise known as overserved.
They were, they didn't know any better, I guess. It was,
And you use it in the bar?
We use quite a bit of absinthe. We use the Pernod absinthe, which is, you know, the classic absinthe that was the French absinthe before it was outlawed. So there's drinks like the Corpse Survivor, there's things like, great name, right?
Man.
Corpse Survivor, absinthe, yes.
Okay, I'll take two again.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go.
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial. I think it's safe to say, and my next guest I'm sure will have something to say about this since he's been around for about 32 years here in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Las Vegas is by definition always reinventing itself. Every time you see think there's something new, then there's something newer. And it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. My next guest, Don Thrasher, the president of Park District Holdings, where we are right now. So let's talk about where we are right now. If I walked down the strip right now and said to somebody, let's go to the park, most people would have no idea what I'm talking about. And yet you're here and there's lots of stuff going on.
Right.
I mean, you started, what, 1984?
That's
right?
Correct.
Right. And what, New York, and what was it, Circus and?
Circus is where I started, 1984,
Oh, you were the trapeze act.
Not quite.
No, but you came in to basically get them up and running.
Yeah.
And that was before they even were a part of MGM.
That's correct.
Right? I mean, that was another whole company. Was it Boyd?
It was Circus Enterprises.
It was, yeah. 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 So why this and why now?
I think a lot of just what you said, you know, Las Vegas is always reinventing itself. And the one thing that really hadn't ever been done is the encouragement of people to be outside as opposed to inside. The business model of Las Vegas for many, many years, and as you mentioned, my experience here.
Don't let them leave the casino.
Don't let them leave your revenue centers.
Yeah.
But we were in a unique position here with our company, and we had this piece of property. And, you know, we owned all the adjacent doorknobs, as I like to say. So we could do something different.
As a sense of place, we are next to New York, New York.
New York, New York. Monte Carlo. MGM is right across the street. City Center is just down the street.
Right.
Excalibur is just down the street to the south. Luxor, Mandalay Bay, just a little further south. So
right.
We really kind of dominate this neighborhood there, and that allowed us to take the chance and really do something different.
Okay, so tell me, does that mean everybody's al fresco or what?
Well, if you look up and down the street, you see that that's a growing trend, and what we tried to do is, and what we have done, is taken it off the street and taken it into a different environment, really kind of a social urban experience, much like what you see in some of the cities in back east New York and Madison Park and Bryant Square and Bryant Park. And, you know, there never was a park, you know, on the Las Vegas Strip. And that's pretty hard to duplicate because of the, you know, as I said, we had a unique position with the land holdings that we had. So that was our goal, to create this outdoor experience,
sure.
Encourage people to outdoor, socialize, enjoy the entertainment, you know, dine, drink, just people watch.
All right, so here's my question. That was the goal, uh-huh. But then there was the challenge.
Yeah.
How'd you make it work?
Just a unique design, for one thing. Also, you know, we added an arena here, 20,000-seat T-Mobile Arena.
Right across the street here. Yeah.
Right across the street. And
yeah, for years, people don't know, it was always the Thomas and Mac Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And that's old.
That's old.
Yeah.
Yes. But the T-Mobile Arena, we added that. And the park becomes the main ingress, egress for the arena.
For the flow.
For the flow.
So if you're coming out of the concert, you're right here.
You come through the park.
Right.
Because it's the main pedestrian ingress, egress for the arena. And that works very well for us. And then the two hotels that are right adjacent to the facility really, you know, help feed it.
And then, of course, there's just running the numbers. I mean, your whole background is you're a numbers guy.
That was my background.
Come on, you're a numbers guy.
It's been a while. I always tell people that I know enough now just to be dangerous.
All right, but you had to run the numbers on this place to say, yes, we can actually make this work based on the flow.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then you have to have a wide variety of opportunity for people. It can't just be one restaurant or one chain.
No, you have to have a variety, and we did that, and we kind of started it with Shake Shack. Right on the corner, very well-known name.
Well, Shake Shack is you're going to get me there, and I don't even eat meat.
Yeah. Very well-known name and doing very, very well. And then, you know, we progressed, you know, coming to the west there. And our next venue is a company called Bruxy, and they're out of Southern California, the Orange County area. And there, everything is served on a waffle. And that was a totally different concept. So it's not burgers or pizza. It's everything served on a waffle, and they've been very, very popular. Our next venue.
A little Belgian touch.
A little Belgian touch.
Yeah, go ahead.
Then the next venue is the Beer House, and that's an MGM-owned property. We have 87 beers there, 35
all on tap.
Tap.
Oh, 35 on tap.
35 on tap.
So you got lots of hoses running in the back.
We got a lot of hoses running back
yeah.
there. And it's, you know, a fun place where you can just relax and you can play games and you know, enjoy sports, that type of thing.
It's essentially a sports bar, too.
In a way. We didn't set out with that in mind, but it has a lot of those characteristics. And then we moved on to California Pizza Kitchen, which is a very well-known name.
Sure.
But what we did here and what they did for us is they really kind of reinvented themselves. And if you go into this California Pizza Kitchen, it's unlike others that you're probably accustomed to seeing.
Because?
Great architecture, expanded menu. Only 25% of their sales is actually pizza.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Howard Radio, clearance, over.
That's Clarence, over.
Over.
Roger.
Huh?
Joining me now is a guy who's got a name that got my attention right away. For anybody who's ever come to Las Vegas, his name is, and before I tell you what he does, I'll just give you his name, Albert Mack. For those of you who ever attended a sporting event in Las Vegas, you know the name Mack because you were in the arena, named, I believe, for your grandfather.
That's correct.
And your name, Albert Mack, you're not doing sporting events right now. You're doing restaurants.
That's awesome.
And we're
correct.
Right. In fact, you're one of the owners right here at Sake Rock.
Yes, sir.
But let's talk, first of all, about the legend and the legacy of the name and Las Vegas, about your grandfather.
Yes, well, you know, I've been very lucky to be born in the family that I was born into, and You know, my grandfather believed very heavily in Las Vegas and thought that with his partner, Perry Thomas, so Thomas and Mac.
I remember Perry Thomas.
That the city could never be a true metropolitan city unless they had a great education source. And UNLV is that place.
And by the way, you know, I remember going to see Jerry Tarkanian and the Rebels.
That's right. Right.
And Perry Thomas, of course, I remember interviewing him during the old days of the crazy Vegas in the 70s with, you know, Tony the Ant, right?
The Wild West.
The Wild West and Lefty Rosenthal. And, of course, for those of you who never saw the movie Casino, you know, well, if you did see the movie Casino, you know exactly who I'm talking about, right? Because Perry Thomas was the banker, right?
I mean, that's correct.
And then there was your grandfather, right?
That's right. So they owned the bank, and, we were one of the only ones that were willing to lend to the casinos and believe that it would make Las Vegas the city that it is.
And guess what happened? Here it is. Now, how did you get to do this? I mean, you weren't raised to be a restaurateur, were you?
No. I was raised mostly in industrial and office development. But our family, obviously, being around the
hotels. Which explains sushi a lot.
That's right. But being around the hotels my whole life with Steve Wynn, especially being such an incredible mentor for me, took me into the hospitality trade. And after a couple of years.
So when Steve Wynn took you in, what were you doing for him?
So I was did the executive management rotation with the Wynn. I basically spent time in every single department, whether it was housekeeping, front services, you know, the nitty gritty.
Did you make beds?
I did. I cleaned rooms. I parked cars. I washed dishes, and then worked my way up to executive level.
What was the job you liked the least?
There is no job you like the least when it gets you to the point in which you want to get to.
What's the job you like? Don't be political with me. I want to know. What did you hate the most?
I would argue that in-house cleaning, they're very particular. It's very military-esque, and you can understand when you know Steve, obviously, that every single bed corner has to be a certain way, and the toilet paper has to be a certain way. So it takes you a little while to get used to it.
Now, in your own home now, is the toilet paper a certain way?
It is. You can actually ask my wife. I've become a little neurotic about it.
I bet. All right, so that you went up the ladder there.
Yes, sir.
Right, learning the hospitality business. Now, one of the highest failure rates in the hospitality business is the restaurant business. Here you are in a restaurant.
That's correct. I'm very fortunate to be in the city of Las Vegas, to be on this trip in front of this incredible T-Mobile arena. You know, it really, it's an opportunity.
Isn't it
of a
ironic
lifetime.
You grew up with the Mac Arena?
That's right.
Right? And now you got the new one.
That's right.
Now, what's happening with the Mac Arena?
UNLV is getting better and better. Their program is still
strong. They're still playing there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they still have the rodeo. I mean, they're still, the Thomas and Mac Arena is still a wonderful arena. They're getting a bit of an overhaul, so you'll see it. You'll see it come a little bit more modern.
Do you have a preferred parking space there?
I do not.
I had to ask.
That's right.
Mr. Mac is here. Would like to park his car.
That's right. They're like, that'll be $12.
Okay. I just double checking. Okay. So how did you do the transition into this restaurant?
So the transition, Socky Rock came about from just my travels over the years and things that I saw in the city of Las Vegas and what I think is kind of missing in your dining experience. And what I've kind of found was the evolution of dining is more the entertainment feature. So call it entertainment dining, if you will.
Okay.
And, especially in Las Vegas or any major city, you can find restaurants that have excellent food. Everybody's got great food because you have an excellent chef. You put it together well. Your service can be good. But at the end of the day, in Las Vegas especially, guests are segmenting their night, and I don't think that needs to be necessary. So they're saying, I'm going to go to dinner here, and then I'm going to go think about this show, and then I'm going to go to this bar, and then I'm going to go to this club. And what we do is kind of roll that all up into a pretty bow and give you the time of your life.
And why sushi?
Sushi is a wonderful sharing plate. It's something where you can sit in a group of four, you can sit in a group of 20, and everybody wants to have little bits and pieces of everything, and it doesn't get too filling, so you can end up having a wonderful night all around. And it just really gives the opportunity for some flexibility and some real creativity on what you can eat.
But you're now in a city, as you know better than anybody, where everybody is a celebrity chef. Right? At least half these guys have their own shows or did have their own shows.
That's right.
Everybody's one-upping everybody else. How do you stay competitive?
Again, it's just about providing a service to the customer that they can't really get anywhere else. And that's where our food quality and our entertainment combination really come into play.
All right. So tell me about the food.
The food, again, our executive chef is Bobby Silva. He came from Sushi Samba, which is incredible.
We got Sushi Samba, yeah.
Before that, he was with Michael Mina. So his cuisine and his creativity, you know, runs the gamut. So it's not just sushi. We have an unbelievable 42-ounce tomahawk steak. You know, we have...
That is otherwise known as a weapon of mass destruction.
And you'd be surprised how many of those we sell in a night. It's really incredible.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, do people actually finish them?
Oh, again, shared plates.
No kidding.
So they sit in a nice group, no, and they sit down, and we fillet a slice it for them.
I remember restaurants that say, if you can finish this, it's free.
Not in Las Vegas.
I gotcha. All right, so you've got this 42-ounce tomahawk steak. Okay, that's on you, not on me. Okay, what else?
Well, as far as the sushi goes, you know, we've actually brought you a few plates to try. Our most popular sushi roll is called the El Chapo roll. So, you know, a little play on words with that one. It's
Is that next to the Sean Penn roll? I just want to know. I just, you know.
That's right. That's the one that runs away. But after that, we
The Sean Penn roll talks to the El Chapo roll. Then the Sean Penn roll runs away, and the El Chapo roll gets eaten. Okay, that's how it works, you see? Okay.
It doesn't get away this time.
No, it doesn't get away, okay.
But, no, it's wonderful.
And what's
in
that roll?
So it's very light. You know, on the inside, we have our spicy snow crab, a little bit of avocado. On the outside, we have our sushi epi, so it's shrimp, thin slice of lemon, and we finish it off with our homemade tomatillo sauce and some micro coriander. Again, it touches the palate. It gives you a little bit of freshness as you eat it, and obviously, again, we'd love to have you try it, and it's just one of many specialty rolls that we offer.
And this one here?
So in front of you, we also have one of our small plates. It's our salt and pepper shrimp, so it's lightly battered black tiger shrimp.
I was warned about these.
Yeah, yeah, they're very popular. You know, again, the salt and pepper, you know, there's make no mistake about the title.
I'm not telling you that I just made this up. They told me that you had different kind of edamame here.
We have our edamame rock, which we actually have for you up on the in the room as well, and that just gives you an unbelievable little extra spice and citrus flavor that you don't get it anywhere else.
Not bad.
Like you said, it's Las Vegas. It's all about the creativity.
It is. But you're going to keep the 42-ounce tomahawk steak. Hey, Albert Mack, owner of Sake Rock. Thanks, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I really appreciate that.
This is your captain speaking. There is absolutely no cause for alarm.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure.
My next guest actually was on the show with me about 3 years ago from the ARIA and talking about this. An important topic, especially here in Las Vegas, especially in an era where resources are not plentiful, where people need to be more aware of their environment, and in a city that I will say, honestly, had a reputation for 3 or 4 decades as being probably the most politically incorrect city in America.
It might still be true.
It might still be true.
Yeah.
But what about environmentally? My guest is Cindy Ortega, the Chief Sustainability Officer of MGM Resorts.
Hi, Peter.
How
Welcome
doing?
Back. Good
Thank
to see you.
But you know what I'm saying. I mean, the
I
point
do.
Is, you know, the amount of water that's consumed in this city, and we're in the desert, right? The amount of electricity on the power grid, emissions, pollution, wastewater, everything. And when you guys got involved in City Center, which was your baby, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you had big challenges to how to make that work within that framework.
It was difficult. You know, City Center is a world accomplishment in the area of green building, and it really still is. It's the largest high-end certified green building in the world.
Well, let's talk about it, because everybody likes to talk about, you know, ecotourism or LEED, and nobody really has ever fully explained LEED to me.
Well, LEED is like a report card, and what it is it's a common communication where one project that might be a big luxury hotel compared to, say, a library uses the same sets of measures to communicate environmental responsibility. And it's a good system, and it provides us in a framework so that the owner and the architect and the constructor can work together to meet their goals.
Of course, within a budget that is constantly changing and everybody gets angry at some point.
At some point, and you know, it's a difficult thing because when you look at the environmental points of a construction project, many of them the guest doesn't see. so highly efficient, not good lighting, low flow water features. And those are things that might have a trade-off in favor of things like beautiful chandeliers or other things that the guest sees. And so it's always important that we communicate really closely the environmental attributes during the construction project.
I mean, I don't just do this in Las Vegas. I do this when I go to a cruise ship, or I do this when I look at a high-rise building anywhere in the world, and especially a residential high-rise building, and I go, how many toilets are flushing at any one time? Do you ever think of those things?
I remember when I was a young woman, that used to be something that high school kids did in hotels. They'd all try to flush them at the same time and see if they could overflow the system. So I never have thought about how many.
Well, I wasn't asking you to flush them all at the same time. I'm just asking you if you ever imagine how many are actually at any given moment being flushed.
Yeah,
you have to come up with that.
I have not thought of that.
Well, see, we have to talk about sustainability there because it's got to go somewhere.
Well, what we do, and you know, it's interesting about Las Vegas because one of the biggest misconceptions of Las Vegas is water use. And in fact, when you flush a toilet in Las Vegas or take a shower, the water that goes down the drain right there is back in Lake Mead the next day. And so our water here is actually
after being treated.
After being treated.
Thank you. I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, okay. Better mention it. So the lake,
And it needs to get back in Lake Mead because those water levels are dropping.
Oh, and we're only borrowing that water because the water is reused. So we take it out and we clean it. We use it. It goes down the drain. It's cleaned and it's returned to Lake Mead.
And yet that water level is still dropping.
Yeah. And, you know, what really drives that is the weather patterns up in the mountains, up in Colorado, Montana, and upstream. And when we don't have snowfall up there and we don't have runoff, that's what makes the lake water go down.
Do you envision a time when we're going to see some serious desalination here?
I don't think so. But it remains to be seen. If you go to Dubai, there's a lot of desalinization that happens there to provide that desert environment with water.
I mean, I just envision long pipes going from Las Vegas to the Pacific Ocean to try to just make sure that you don't run out of water.
Well, there's a project in the pipeline right now, no pun intended, here in Las Vegas to pipe water out of central Nevada into Las Vegas. And that's on hold right now. As we progress along, but certainly it's gone through an environmental impact.
And the reason why I'm saying that, you have neighboring states from which you get your water too, and mm-hmm. one of these days, Colorado and California are going to go, you can't take our water anymore. Now what are you going to do?
Well, we keep giving it back. You know, we borrow it for a day and then we send it back to them. About a little over 60% of the water that's taken out of Lake Mead is returned to Lake Mead and then sent downstream.
Sure. But you would agree that if it's 60% at a certain point, you're not adding to it.
Right. It, definitely. I mean, for certain, water is the most important social problem and environment today. Now, if you look at the park, the way that we get around borrowing water from Lake Mead and using it for plants is that we actually have a well here, and all of the planting here at the park is serviced by well water.
And interestingly enough, look, we're dealing with a city that's had a moratorium on watering your lawns for a long time now.
Yeah. And we're the thing that surprises me when I travel around is how I live in a water culture here that's just natural for me. I water at different times. I don't wash my car outside. And we have a very astute population here.
And that's always going to be helpful to you because then you don't have to educate that many people all the
time.
That's
right.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.